had to make some adjustments because it was a significant loss of revenue for the Alaska Railroad in the neighborhood of $5 million.
The Alaska Railroad plans dozens of layoffs. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, June 19th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, public opposition to UAA's modified shootout promotion.
Frankly, it's a Band-Aid on a bullet hole. It's just trying to window dress a bad situation.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Someone you know is likely a trust beneficiary, a family member, friend, coworker, neighbor, maybe you. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority supports a statewide system of care for people with mental illness, developmental disabilities, chronic alcoholism and substance abuse, Alzheimer's, and traumatic brain injury. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, here for all Alaskans, mhtrust.org.
The Alaska Railroad is eliminating 52 positions. The layoffs seem to be evidence that the global economic downturn that started a few years ago is starting to have a bigger impact on Alaska. And if the trend continues, officials fear more cuts may be looming for the state's only rail service. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
Officials blame the layoffs at the Alaska Railroad on decreased fuel hauls from the Flint Hills Refinery in North Pole to Ted Stevens International Airport. Bruce Carr is director of strategic planning for the Alaska Railroad. He says the cuts will impact Anchorage and beyond.
They are both in Anchorage and Fairbanks and perhaps in other locations up and down the railroad as well. We have eliminated a yard crew in Anchorage, a yard crew in Fairbanks, and several other positions.
Not all of the positions are filled, Carr says, so the actual number of people getting pink slips will be fewer than 52. In late 2008 and early 2009, 191 positions were eliminated, reclassified, or made seasonal in a series of layoffs at ARRC. Overall, 35 people were let go. Carr says railroad officials knew they had to make more cuts this spring after they lost millions in business from the Flint Hills refinery.
We had to make some adjustments because it was a significant loss of revenue for the Alaska Railroad in the neighborhood of $5 million. And that was not foreseen, and we had to make adjustments to our business plan.
The $5 million equals about a 5% freight revenue loss for the railroad, which has an annual revenue of $100 million and a profit of about $15 million. Carr says the cuts are a result of a domino effect that started at the Ted Stevens International Airport.
Ted Stevens Airport is experiencing a reduction in flights for freight, for, you know, their cargo flights. So their demand is down. As a result, Flint Hills' demand is down along with the rest of the market.
Trudy Wassel is the business manager for the airport. She says 80% of the revenue generated at the Anchorage Airport is from cargo planes.
Basically, when the airplanes leave Asia, they can carry more cargo, less fuel. They will land in Anchorage and get gas and then continue on to deliver their cargo into the other United States cities.
Wassel says cargo flights began declining sharply in 2009. Officials at Flint Hills say about the same time, higher energy and crude prices made it impossible for them to compete with Asian fuel suppliers. As a result, the refinery in North Pole shut down a jet fuel unit in 2010 and are now in the process of shutting down a second unit. Flint Hills has one remaining unit at North Pole. Neil Freed is an economist for the state of Alaska. He says the state is starting to feel the effects of uncertainty in European and Asian markets.
Alaska is very much tied to the global economy, whether it's, you know, selling our fish, our energy, our minerals, or just the effect it has on the price of oil.
But Freed says in the big scope of things, the layoffs at the railroad are fairly minor.
You know, you never want to lose 50 jobs, certainly jobs like the Alaska Railroad jobs, because they are above average jobs. You know, when we look at our broader job market right now, there are better times to be looking for a job, but they're better here in Alaska than most other places.
Carr with the railroad says this round of layoffs will not affect passenger service, but he's worried a plan by Congress to slash $25 to $30 million in Federal Transit Administration grants could. Alaska Railroad officials say they should know more by the end of the summer. Meantime, the Alaska Railroad employees who will be let go in this round of layoffs should be informed by July 1st. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The U.S. House passed a bill today ceding tens of thousands of acres of the Tongass National Forest to the Sealeska Native Corporation. Representative Don Young was the chief sponsor of the Sealeska bill. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, the vote is just one step the bill needs to clear Congress.
This is the furthest along the legislative process the Sealeska bill has made it. It passed the Republican-controlled House with 232 votes, including 16 Democrats. The bill would transfer control of tens of thousands of acres of the Tongass from the U.S. Forest Service to the Sealeska Corporation, the final regional native corporation to settle its land claims. The land is outside the plots originally agreed to in the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act 40 years ago. Some of the land will be used for logging, with some future sites left open to other possible ventures. Those future sites have Andy Burgess worried. She's with the Alaska Wilderness League.
There is no prohibition on what can be done at these sites.
Those sections of land could be parceled off as heritage sites or designated for money-making projects like ecotourism. While her fears may be stoked by the bill's passage in the House, it still has some way to go before it becomes law. The bill needs to clear the Senate, and if its current pace there is any indication, that probably won't come quickly. Senator Lisa Murkowski introduced her version into committee last year, but has yet to receive a markup, let alone a vote. Aides to Murkowski say it's possible the House vote will speed along the process, at least out of committee, but the full Senate is another story. Murkowski's plan is more scaled back than the House version.
To have limited impact into those old growth areas, to have limited impact into the areas around watershed, and that's why we've gone through this negotiated process.
She says that process has taken years, years of negotiations with Sealeska, the U.S. Forest Service, and Southeast residents. And those negotiations could make for a more pleasing bill for both parties in the Senate. And while Young's bill did earn some Democratic votes, it lost more Republicans, a sign it could be hard to move his version down the line. Senator Murkowski says the chairman of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, Jeff Bingaman, has not committed to another hearing on the bill, but she's trying.
We keep sitting down, and I suppose that the fact that we're still talking about it is good.
These days at the Capitol, that small step in the right direction can be counted as a victory. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
A strong earthquake shook Shemya Island this morning but caused no damage to Ericsson Air Station. According to Alaska Earthquake Information Center seismologist Natasha Rupert, the 6.0 magnitude earthquake occurred just before 8 a.m. in a mostly uninhabited part of the Western Aleutians. The epicenter was approximately 100 miles away from Shemya, and the dozen or so airmen stationed there noticed the ground shaking.
Everybody felt it, but there was no strong object. It wasn't strong enough to even topple objects from the shelves.
Just before 1 p.m., a 5.8 magnitude aftershock hit, shaking the island a second time. No injuries or damage have been reported from the initial quake or the aftershock. Rupert adds the earthquake was not powerful enough to trigger a tsunami. She says that it was a strike-slip earthquake, where pieces of earth move side to side instead of toppling over each other. Rupert adds that even if it had been a more intense thrust earthquake, a magnitude of 6.0 isn't powerful enough to create a big wave. Cleveland Volcano's alert level was raised today also after a pilot reported an ash cloud. The pilot report suggests the ash cloud rose to an altitude of 35,000 feet or 6.6 miles. The Alaska Volcano Observatory says additional eruptions are still possible with little warning, and ash clouds 20,000 feet above sea level are possible. The 5,675-foot volcano is on an uninhabited island about 940 miles southwest of Anchorage. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a big Supreme Court win for tribes across the country and in Alaska.
It really is quite substantial what the Alaska Native healthcare community has suffered in annual shortfalls year in and year out.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com, and by
First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
A long-awaited U.S. Supreme Court decision is being celebrated by tribes across Alaska and the nation today. The Rama Navajo case is a 22-year-old class action lawsuit against the federal government that sought full payment for contracts the tribes held for health services, law enforcement, and land programs. Anchorage attorney Lloyd Miller has worked on the litigation. He says government attorneys told the Supreme Court justices during the trial that if it was held responsible for the damages, it would equal $1 billion.
I don't disagree with that. So now the task before us will be to sit down with the government and try to come up with a precise accounting of how much is required to be awarded to all of the nation's tribes in money damages.
Miller says the decision's impact will most likely mean tribes who have hesitated in the past to contract with the federal government will now do so.
Many tribes have told me, and many have testified in Congress, that the uncertainty over being paid has led tribes not to contract to take over a local clinic or a hospital or a law enforcement operation or a land management program. So I think the certainty now provided, the clear rules, will encourage tribes to engage in greater contracting activities.
Miller says this is what Congress intended, and currently about half of the Bureau of Indian Affairs budget and more than 60% of the Indian Health Service budget are under contract with tribes. The amount is more than $2.3 billion. He says because the contract expense the government underpaid were fixed costs, such as workers' comp and insurance, the tribes had to pay for it, and since 70% of tribal expenses salaries, this meant reducing positions. He says the impact in Alaska will be huge.
I suspect that while the numbers are still being deciphered and investigated, that at the end of the day, the amounts recovered by Alaska Native communities will be some nine-digit number. It really is quite substantial what the Alaska Native healthcare community has suffered in annual shortfalls year in and year out.
Miller says the funding shortfall averaged about $100 million per year nationally, and about a third of that deficit was in Alaska. ExxonMobil has filed a plan of operations for Point Thompson. The action follows a recent legal settlement with the state and nearly five decades of work delays on Alaska's largest undeveloped oil and gas field. Meanwhile, a lawsuit filed earlier this month could stall things again. KUAC's Emily Schwing has more.
A handful of companies have held leases on the 93,000-acre oil and gas field at Point Thompson since 1965. But it wasn't until last month that the site operator, ExxonMobil, finally filed an application to develop the site for production. Joe Balash is the deputy commissioner for Alaska's Department of Natural Resources. He says the application outlines Exxon's operation plans.
It's going to be a series of facilities and wells, and in order to make that facility go, they need to construct a variety of things, including roads, and they need to do some dredging in order to be able to access the site from shore and otherwise, you know, prepare for the construction of what is going to be a pretty significant piece of infrastructure up on the North Slope.
For nearly five decades, DNR has waited for action on 38 leases sold at Point Thompson, but not a single one of the leaseholders has ever moved forward with development. So the state tried to reclaim the acreage in 2005.
Each year, they would have to go in and get what's called a plan of development.
That's Valdez City Attorney Bill Walker.
In other words, it's saying this year, here's what we're going to do. And then that year, they wouldn't do what they said they were going to do. And it was the 23rd plan of development. The DNR commissioner, then commissioner, took it away. And I mean, after 23 plans of saying we're going to do something and they don't do it, after a while, you sort of see a little bit of a pattern. You know, those of us with children, maybe we'll count to three. On something, but no one counts to 23.
In March, the state of Alaska reached a settlement with leaseholders. As part of the agreement, companies have until the winter of 2015 to get liquid natural gas from Point Thompson into the Trans-Alaska pipeline system. But Bill Walker calls the settlement illegal.
The biggest issue is the fact that it was just, I mean, other settlements, other issues we've had to deal with on oil and gas development in Alaska have all begun in front of a public process.
Point Thompson contains an estimated 8 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, which amounts to a quarter of the North Slope's total reserve. In early June, Walker filed a lawsuit in Alaska Superior Court in Anchorage, calling the state's settlement a giveaway of major proportions.
The value of Point Thompson is in the trillions of dollars. And so and it belongs to the state of Alaska. Alaskans own that resource.
Walker says the state did not offer an opportunity for the public to comment on the agreement before it was signed. The application ExxonMobil has submitted for its development plan does include a public comment period, but Walker says that's not enough.
Well, that's a grain of sand in comparison to the whole process. Which is sort of interesting that that's such a small piece, and that does require public comment input, and yet this whole settlement was done without that.
The DNR's Joe Balash says the sooner the field is developed, the more the state will benefit.
The state collects the lion's share of its annual revenue from the production of oil and gas in this state. We collect revenue through the royalty, through the production tax, through the corporate income tax, and through property tax. And all of those are going to be increased as a result of this production at Point Thompson.
Prior to taking legal action, Bill Walker sent a letter to DNR Commissioner Dan Sullivan asking him to reconsider the deal. He says he's not trying to slow development, but he does want to see more transparency in the process. In response, Alaska Attorney General Michael Garrity told Walker in writing that settlements entered into by the state are not subject to administrative challenge by reconsideration or otherwise. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
The Coast Guard is closely watching the Main Bay Salmon Hatchery, 40 miles southeast of Whittier, following the nearby grounding of a fish tender in the western Prince William Sound. The Coast Guard sector in Anchorage received a report yesterday morning that the Ray Dawn was taking on water after hitting a rock in the area. Coast Guard spokesperson Lieutenant Ali Furco says two crew members were rescued by a helicopter and taken to Cordova.
Right now, Marine Safety Unit Valdez is working with the vessel owner and Alaska Maritime Response to salvage the vessel, remove all of the fuel, ensure that the vessel is seaworthy to be towed back to Cordova, where permanent repairs will be made.
A 20 by 15 foot sheen was spotted in the area when the Ray Dawn was grounded. The 49 foot vessel was carrying 3,200 gallons of diesel fuel and 500 gallons of gasoline at the time of the incident.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. Home, it's where you lay your head, eat home-cooked meals, and gather with friends. Home is where you grew up and learned about life. Alaska is home, and when you choose to violate someone by committing sexual assault, you harm them, and you harm yourself, your friends, your family, your home, and Alaska. No one deserves to be sexually assaulted, so make the right choice. Real Alaskans choose respect. This message brought to you by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
In the YK Delta, weather can change suddenly, and in the winter, temperatures can plummet into the minus 40s. This prompted the Bethel Police Department to bring a new toy to town. At a shade over 25 feet long, it's called the Mobile Response Center, and it looks like something straight out of TV's CSI. In Bethel, KYUK's Mark Earhart stepped inside and took a look.
Crime scenes on TV always have big trucks stocked with fancy equipment, complete with black lights and those little flashlights that can peek around corners to find that one key piece of evidence. Well, the Bethel Police Department doesn't have anything quite that fancy, but it does have a brand new, rather large vehicle. Bethel Police Chief Larry Ellerton met me in front of it.
What is this thing exactly?
This is our mobile response center. Basically, what it's going to do is allow the officers to take emergency equipment, evidence, supplies. It's going to have a portable dispatch center in the front.
The response center is basically a heavily upgraded towable camper, Ellerton says. The big white vehicle has floodlights on the outside, an observation deck on top, and a pull-out canopy. Ellerton says this unit will improve police work, especially in the winter.
Right now, one of the problems we face is, especially in the inclement weather, we're trying to run all these events out of the inside of the trucks.
Can we check it out on the inside?
Absolutely.
Wow, it's spacious, kind of like an RV.
It is. Basically, what's going to happen on this front part, there'll be a screen up here and a dispatch radio in here. So in case anything happened to our regular dispatch center, we could still run communications out of the trailer.
The shelves are pretty sparse now, but Ellerton says they will be stocked with evidence equipment, emergency rescue equipment, and other supplies needed for investigations.
With the officers, everything will be there. You know, obviously it's 70 below, and we've had shooting scenes. We've had hostage scenes where we're having to try to rotate the officers every 10 or 15 minutes to try to keep them warm. When you're doing that with just vehicles, that's pretty problematic. It's not safe for the officers. It's not safe for the people we're having to deal with.
He says the $30,000 unit was paid for by a federal Homeland Security grant and that it will be available for the Alaska State Troopers to use as well. For Ellerton and his officers, the unit will allow the police department to better conduct investigations. But don't think the department is suddenly going to turn into CSI Bush Alaska anytime soon.
The best thing you can do for law enforcement work, unlike what TV shows, is to be able to slow down the process. And so the more time you can be on scene and be able to deal with the event, the better job you can do. And this will allow you to do that.
In Bethel, I'm Mark Earhart.
The University of Alaska Anchorage is revising its incredible airfare deal for the Great Alaska Shootout during Thanksgiving weekend. Last week, the university offered free plane tickets to residents from rural hubs like Barrow and Cordova with the purchase of a shootout package. Not even a week old, the deal stirred up so much controversy, UAA is making it a little less sweet. APRN's Wendy Johnson reports.
Now, airfare to Anchorage is included in a $230 package deal with the shootout tickets. After deducting the cost of the shootout tickets, round-trip airfare to the city over Thanksgiving will cost only about $100 per person. Kristen DeSmith, the Assistant Vice Chancellor of University Relations, says public outcry is the reason they altered the package.
After the original program was announced, we had received feedback through legislators, the governor's office, through our statewide offices, that the public was concerned about the free flights. So we listened to the public and made some changes while still remaining true to the original appropriation.
But even with the revision, Dr. Steve Cobb, director of UAA Athletics, believes it's a good deal for Anchorage and Alaska.
It's designed to do a lot of things. It's designed to get more fans at the shootout. It's designed to provide an economic impact to Anchorage during a historically down time. And it's designed to encourage statewide support of the shootout.
It'll be hard to stop people from buying shootout tickets just to get a cheap plane ride to Anchorage, even with the new deal. But Cobb isn't concerned about that.
Anytime you have some program, there's a segment that's going to abuse it, particularly when you deal with sports tickets. It's kind of a cost of doing business.
But Representative Mike Hawker, a Republican from Anchorage, is outraged by the deal. He says the deal is too inviting to scammers who want a cheap ticket to the city, and he thinks that cost isn't worth the benefit.
Actually, I've heard some folks talk about how, you know, they'll take the tickets, come to Anchorage, and then come down to town and try to scalp the tickets to someone else.
The deal elicited an outcry, both about the possibility of scammers and because the state is footing the bill. Cobb says UAA planned to spend about $400,000 to pay for the free airfare for about 1,000 to 1,200 people. Even with the increased cost of airfare, UAA still plans on spending close to $500,000 to fly Alaskans into Anchorage. The UAA Athletic Department received $2 million from the state budget last year. Hawker says he didn't realize that money would be used for something like this.
Back when the appropriation occurred, I certainly was unaware of the idea of providing this transportation, and I don't think that many other legislators were aware. I frankly think the expenditure of state funds to transport people to the shootout is absolutely inappropriate use of public money.
About 230 residents took advantage of the offer for a free plane ticket before Chancellor Tom Case revised it. UAA will honor those tickets, but Hawker believes the whole promotion was a mistake and the revision won't right the athletic department's wrongs.
Frankly, it's a Band-Aid on a bullet hole. It's just trying to window dress a bad situation, something I think the university did inappropriately. The slight change they've made does not begin to change the substance underlying the issue that's caused the community legitimate concern.
The deal was on hold over the weekend, but is available now with a revision. In Anchorage, I'm Wendy Jonathan.
It was too good to be true. The free beer promotion on Air Alaska flights has been modified and no longer includes free beer. Under the old promotion, the first sample of Denali Brewing Company's Single Engine Red was free, but each additional 6-ounce glass cost $3. The new promotion charges $1 for the first glass and each additional glass. Micah Lillard, ERA's marketing manager, explains.
Well, we ran into some unforeseen challenges that we weren't expecting. So we have gone ahead and decided to charge for the first one, but go ahead and lower any additional samples after that.
The unforeseen challenge, according to Alcoholic Beverage Control Board Director Shirley Gifford, was a state pricing and marketing statute that prohibits offering or delivering free alcoholic beverages as a marketing tool.
We'd gotten wind of it yesterday, and, you know, I saw it on the news last night, and, of course, it, you know, created some questions for us. And, you know, working with ERA, you know, they decided that they would just go ahead and charge for the beer.
The move on ERA's part to charge a small price for the beer seems to be voluntary as a courtesy to the state, because as Gifford points out, there is no federal law against giving away free beer. The no longer free beer promotion is scheduled to expire at the end of the month, but Lillard says ERA will consider extending it into July. The service is available on ERA's Dash 8 aircraft flying between Anchorage and Fairbanks, Dead Horse, Homer, and Kodiak. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, Tony Gorman in Valdez, Mark Earhart in Bethel, and Jay Barrett in Kodiak. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C., and Wendy Jonathan from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. For thousands of years, the coastal residents of Arctic Alaska have depended on the polar bear for sustenance, utilitarian, and spiritual purposes. The Alaska Nanook Commission was formed to ensure that current and future Alaska Native subsistence hunters will be able to continue to harvest this important resource. The Alaska Nanook Commission, along with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, would like to hear from subsistence polar bear hunters. Learn more at alaskanannookcommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.